And I know that you, welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. You can see that we have high school students visiting with us today. I know that you're both experienced. You each will have 15 minutes, 5 minutes of rebuttal, and state your name for the record when you begin your arguments. And with that, Ms. Carlson, are you ready to proceed?
Certainly, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel, future members of the bar. May it please the court, my name is Ann Morris Carlson. I can be referred to as Ms. Carlson or appellant, either is fine. My pronouns are she and her. And I represent Appellant Mother, L.C.M. Appellant Mother is requesting that this court would reverse the district court's order terminating her parental rights and remand for proper findings. This case is concerning to me because the court repeatedly throughout its order terminating mother's parental rights cites to the standard that mother has to affirmatively demonstrate her ability to parent. The court cites to more recent case law where this court and the Supreme Court clarified a previous standard. Let me back up. As this court is aware, in the state of Minnesota, when a parent has previously had his or her parental rights involuntarily terminated or custody involuntarily transferred, it is presumed that that parent is palpably unfit to parent pursuant to Minnesota Statute 260C.301 sub 1B4. And when that is the case, Human Services is able to remove the child directly from the hospital without giving the parent the opportunity to bring the child home, placing the child in foster care shortly after child's birth. In this case, mother previously had her parental rights to other children terminated in a case that was a couple years previous. The district court in this case issued a 42-page order finding that mother failed to rebut the presumption that she is palpably unfit. I found the district court's findings very troubling because in reaching this conclusion, the district court continually and repeatedly weighed the evidence presented by mother against evidence that was presented by the agency. Finding.
Counsel, let me stop you there. So the district court did analyze whether the presumption was rebutted, but then the district court went on and, the district court concluded that mother had not met her burden of production to support the, to rebut the presumption. But then in paragraph 47, on page 35 of the order, the district court went on and said, even if the presumption did not apply, mother is still palpably unfit and concluded that there was clear and convincing evidence to support that determination. That the clear and convincing evidence standard is discussed in paragraph 78. So it seems to me that the district court had an alternative analysis. So do we even need to reach the question of whether the district court erred in its articulation of the legal standard regarding rebutting the presumption?
Your Honor, I interpret this court's question as being whether or not it's harmless error. If, in fact, the court was planning to find that a statutory basis existed without the presumption of palpable unfitness. However, I think that it's necessary for the court to acknowledge, because the burden of production is such a low burden, and because mother more than met the burden of production. She had, I believe, three professionals testify to her engagement in services. And I would also, I think that respondent did a very beautiful job of outlining how these two standards are different. I really appreciated that interpretation. In that, the proper standard, I think we agree on, would be suitable to be entrusted with the care of children. not able to successfully parent a child. That's the old standard. The new standard, suitable to be entrusted with the care of a child. And I would look to that same page, page 35. No one has accused respondent mother of lacking day-to-day basic parenting skills. In fact, her visits were largely considered appropriate during the case. She has an ability to provide basic care for an infant, but this is not sufficient evidence that, if believed, would overcome the presumption.
But the court also, I'm looking at paragraph 74, where the judge says even if the presumption did not apply, mother is still palpably unfit, goes through criminal behavior, lack of parenting skills, cognitive and mental health issues, lack of nurturing, failure to meet the child's needs, failure to recognize parenting decisions, and then says she has a long-standing pattern of involvement in domestic violence, criminal behavior, struggles with chemical dependency. Based on the evidence presented at trial, she has not addressed these concerns in a way that gives this court confidence in her ability to safely parent a child in the foreseeable future.
And I think that misstates the standard when it says gives this court confidence in her ability to safely parent a child in the future, which I think maybe, arguably, the court could have reached in a proper analysis of subparent 4 by making clear and specific findings that conform with the statutory criteria. But that isn't what happened here. The court's findings are, you know, mother has these flaws. Okay, mother has these flaws. I want to see a real clear and specific finding that says that mother demonstrates a specific pattern of specific conduct that's permanently detrimental to the health and welfare of the child, of a nature and duration that is not going to be remedied in the foreseeable future.
Well, to Judge Cochran's point, why don't paragraphs 75, 76, 77, and 78 address those very concerns?
My read of this court's order is that instead of making the requisite findings that conform with the statute, it weighs mother's evidence against the agency's evidence. And I believe that, I mean, the findings the court is asking me to look at, they are long, numerous in length, but everything that I see here gives me, mother presents this evidence, and I don't take that evidence as being presented because the evidence presented by the agency is more persuasive to me.
No, I don't read, I mean, we both can read those paragraphs and come to our own conclusions, but the court recites the criminal behavior that happened during the course of this trial, her drug use during the course of the trial, and it's not mother's presentation of that evidence, it's what the department presented.
I mean, mother presented evidence, and that's not in dispute, that she was complying with receiving treatment, attending domestic violence classes,
well,
and parenting classes.
Well, except that she didn't let her providers know about the time that she stole a car with the man that she was not supposed to have any, Mr. Myers, she wasn't supposed to have any contact with him. So there was all of that evidence also provided or presented and received during trial and presented by the department. So I'm not reading the paragraphs the same way you are.
Well, and if I can follow up with that, I mean, there are all kinds of findings of fact. As you said, this is a 40-page order, and even before you get to the district court's sort of assessment and discussion of the actual statutory termination grounds, you've got all kinds of fact findings, right? I mean, I'm just picking fact finding 34. Respondent mother has not adequately addressed her issues with domestic violence, which continue to directly impact her ability to parent the child. I mean, those are the sort of findings you're saying the court didn't make, right? I mean, they link the concerns that are expressed with ability to parent.
And obviously I read the order of the lens of the appellant counsel and read it as, why am I not seeing that this court found that there is sufficient evidence to rebut the presumption, there is sufficient evidence to rebut the presumption of palpable unfitness. That's my greatest concern about this error or this order is evidence was presented. And rather than acknowledge that the evidence was presented, the evidence gets weighed. it's continually weighed throughout the order as being not as persuasive as the agency's evidence. And my read of JAK and my read of other cases is that the first question the court needs to look at is, did the parent meet the burden of production? Did the parent produce evidence? Not who wins the case.
So that's what, I'm looking at your appellate brief on page 10, and you indicate that it appears clarification regarding the burden of production is required. What would you have this court say about that?
I think that where the district court erred is that it made what should have been a two-part analysis a one-part analysis, because it clearly intermingled the agency's burden with the respondent mother's burden. Respondent mother, I mean, we need to know the rules of the game that we're playing here, and I assume that respondent mother goes into the trial with the interpretation that she is burdened with producing evidence that she is suitable to be entrusted with the care of a child, and not that she is at a point where she is up against the burden of persuasion that the district court erroneously intersperses, where I think the clarification is...
I understand your concerns in that regard, and the case law does establish that the burden is easily rebutted, and it's a burden of production, but can you identify what evidence you think the district court was actually weighing? In other words, is there specific evidence from the county that you think it weighed against mother's evidence? Or was the district court rather evaluating the evidence as respondent argues? In other words, evaluating the evidence that mother produced, looking at that, taking the evidence as a whole and determining whether the presumption had been rebutted.
Well, I think, you know, as Judge Riley identified, the fact that mother was not immediately forthcoming about everything going on in her personal life with every service provider that testified at trial doesn't negate the fact that she's engaging in the services that Hennepin County has recommended that she engage in. It doesn't...
But engaging in the services isn't enough. She has to show that she's suitable to be entrusted with the care of the child, right?
And I read the district court's order finding 72 to be that she is suitable to be entrusted with the care of a child, but she hasn't actively and affirmatively demonstrated her ability to safely parent. I mean, the court says
so
there's...
So is there evidence from the county, though, that you think the district court was weighing her evidence against?
Yes, I think...
The testimony of the county social worker?
I think any finding that says mother presents this, however, service provider's testimony was not helpful because, that's evidence that was brought out by cross-examination. Service provider did not demonstrate that service provider had all of the information that the county had.
Well, the judge in the very beginning, paragraph 16 through 21, said who she believed. She went through each of the witnesses and said, provided credible, persuasive. The service provider's turning point testified credibly, but her testimony was limited in its helpfulness by her role and overall knowledge of respondent mother's circumstances. So the judge did what we want judges to do, which is to let us know who they believed and which part of the testimony they believed.
I agree with this court's point that the district court does have the discretion to determine the credibility of witnesses, and that lies solely with the district court. And I'm in no way asking this court to find that the court erred in its credibility determinations. I do find that when you are evaluating whether the burden of production has been met, saying something like a professional witness is limited in their helpfulness, I mean, that to me indicates that you are weighing the cross-examination of that witness as, you know, the witness testifies they don't have all the information.
Well, it's been decades since I've been in juvenile court, and the law was different back then. But as I understand it, the trial isn't bifurcated so that you have the beginning of the trial where the mother is producing evidence to rebut the presumption. and then there's a determination, and then you go to the county's presentation if mother has produced. So as I understand it, the trial is tried as a whole.
The court is correct in that. I'm not disputing that the trial went forth with mother carrying the burden of having to produce evidence, and had she met that burden, the burden of persuasion would have been with the county in the same trial. Although the trial is not bifurcated, I do believe that the court's analysis needs to reflect two separate standards that this court's order does not reflect, and the stale standard that is repeatedly cited to by this court, affirmatively demonstrate an ability to safely parent, makes it so that the remainder of the analysis is just deeply troubling to me. I am asking that this court would reverse the district court's order. I am asking, if I may finish my sentence, this court would, I believed JAK was very clear. And I believe that the message in footnote one was very clear that the standard that we used to use has evolved. The court relied on a stale standard, and the reason I'm asking for clarification, although I think JAK is very clear, is because what I want to see in a case like this is, first, the question answered of whether the burden of production was met. Because if I'm not seeing that the court actually answers that question, I find it very difficult to follow the remainder of the analysis. And I think that's the meat of my argument. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning to the court and counsel, and may it please the court. My name is Britta Rapp, and I am an assistant Hennepin County attorney, appearing on behalf of respondent in this case, the Hennepin County Health and Human Services Department. The issues raised in this appeal are relatively narrow in scope. For example, the district court found that the department was relieved of reasonable efforts in this case. Appellant does not challenge that finding. The district court also found that termination was in the child's best interests. Appellant does not challenge that finding. Instead, this case is centered on the district court's finding that appellant is palpably unfit to parent. Appellant's rights to five other children were involuntarily terminated in 2019. As a result, there were two paths the district court could have taken and did in fact take to reach the palpable fitness determination. First, that appellant is presumed palpably unfit and failed to rebut that presumption, and second, that appellant was proven palpably unfit by clear and convincing evidence, regardless of the existence of the presumption.
Well, mother did produce evidence to rebut the presumption. And it's a light production that they have to do under the Supreme Court case law and our case law after that. So I don't understand your argument that she didn't produce enough evidence.
And the thrust of my argument is that the standard was clarified to make it a lower weight, but the appellant, when they present evidence about the rebutting the presumption, still needs to satisfy a certain standard that they are suitable to be entrusted with the care of children. So it is insufficient for the parent merely to present evidence that they engaged in services. They have to present evidence of substantive progress and substantive change that they have made improvements and they now can be entrusted with the care of the child. And in this case, appellant presented evidence that she engaged in some services. However, by calling her two service providers, all they were able to testify to is that she did attend some meetings and engage in some services. But they weren't able to testify to the fact that she has made meaningful change. She has changed her behaviors. She has developed insight and applied the lessons from programming to her day-to-day life to the point where a child could be safely placed in her care.
That seems more than the minimal burden that our Supreme Court and our court has talked about in terms of, you know, just overcoming the presumption. I mean, it's undisputed here that the services she engaged in were services that were aimed at addressing the conditions that had brought her before child protection on the court in the past and in this case, right?
Correct. The other thing I pointed out in my brief is that appellant's own evidence and testimony undercut her argument that she is suitable to be entrusted with the care of children. For example, I cited the JBM case, which really illustrates the fact that you can't consider a parent's testimony and only the positive portions in a vacuum. You are allowed to consider the entirety of their testimony, because all of their testimony is their evidence. And in this case, while the appellant did take the stand and testify that she feels she can safely parent, that was significantly undercut by other parts of her own testimony, where she admitted that she relapsed on cocaine twice during the child protection case, where she significantly minimized the domestic violence concerns with the alleged father of the baby and said that she felt that he could safely care for the child, where she admitted to dismissing the order for protection against her abusive ex-husband right in the middle of the termination trial. Those are all facts that came out in appellant's presentation of her evidence, and it significantly undermined any assertion. It could not justify a finding that she would be suitable to be entrusted with the care of children. In this case, appellant's primary
The district court's findings in paragraph 69 seems to reflect that the district court did do some weighing of the evidence, at least in my reading of it, in considering, you know, whether the presumption was rebutted. So can you address whether the district court weighed the evidence?
Your Honor, I don't characterize that paragraph as weighing of evidence, because if you look at that paragraph, it doesn't talk about any contrary evidence that was introduced by the department. For example, it doesn't say, Ms. McGlory testified to XYZ. However, Ms. Houlihan, the social worker from the department, presented alternate evidence. It doesn't say the department introduced this other exhibit that counteracts her testimony. Instead, it is looking solely at the testimony that appellant provided and asking, is it enough? And in this paragraph, the district court is pointing out that it wasn't enough. It was merely a recitation of the services she engaged in without any substantive evidence about her making improvements and providing even a small amount of evidence, which is all that's required, I agree, only a small amount of evidence, but not even providing a small amount of evidence that she is suitable to be entrusted with the care of a child. And if you look at how the palpable fitness section, starting on page 33, is organized, it very clearly is a two-part analysis contrary to appellant's assertion. It begins with an analysis of rebutting the presumption of palpable unfitness. It does cite the appropriate standards from RDL, JAK, whether she can be entrusted with the care of children. And then it, at this point, exclusively focuses and has a paragraph dedicated to each form of evidence presented
Except
by appellant.
It's unfortunate in paragraph 67 that the district court cited In Re Welfare of DLRD, which came to us in 2003, and it was later that the Supreme Court clarified.
Correct. And as I pointed out in my brief, it would be more concerning if they cited DLRD to talk about how the burden is onerous and a heavy burden on the shoulder of the parents, and they had to marshal all of their resources to engage in their own services. That was the most concerning language from DLRD. But this language, as I argue in my brief, is reasonably comparable to the standard from JAK. Ability to successfully parent a child is very similar to be entrusted with the care of a child. I think those are two sides of the same coin. And when read, that paragraph is read in context, I think that's just illustrative language at the beginning of the paragraph. And it says, then it next says, she can only do this, demonstrate ability to successfully parent a child, by introducing evidence that she's suitable to be entrusted with the care of children, then cites RDL, and then cites JAK. So I think taken in context, it was just more of an analogy and a different way of phrasing the relevant standard of being suitable to be entrusted with the care of children. I don't see anything in the district court's order applying the old standard of the burden being onerous or difficult. In fact, the district court's order reflects the mandate to focus on appellant's evidence and look at substantively if they are suitable to be entrusted with the care of a child. And then after the district court did that, it moved on to the second part of its analysis, starting in paragraph 74, even if the presumption did not apply, respondent mother is still palpably unfit to parent. And at that point, that's when the district court starts analyzing the department's evidence. That's when the district court starts weighing the evidence. That's when the credibility determinations become the most relevant. And that is the part where the deferential standard of review kicks in as well, the clear error standard. And as Your Honors alluded to earlier, this is two paths to get to the same destination. And in order to affirm the termination, this court really only needs to uphold one of those paths. There has been plenty of case law out there where the Court of Appeals says, regardless of the presumption, there's clear and convincing evidence that the parent is palpably unfit, so the termination is affirmed. And in this case, there is clear and convincing evidence, and the challenge to that prong of the court's analysis is that they didn't make sufficient findings. However, as Your Honor noted earlier, there's pages and pages of finding of fact, and starting at paragraph 74, when they're doing the analysis of the clear and convincing evidence standard, all of those findings are in there, that it's directly related to the parent-child relationship. The specific conditions are domestic violence, substance use, and criminal behavior, that she has engaged in services, but they haven't led to substantive change. The relapses on cocaine, the ongoing contact with Mr. Myers, dropping the OFP in the middle of trial after testifying to the court that she was going to go to the OFP hearing and ask to have the OFP reinstated. The criminal behavior throughout the case. All of these things demonstrated that despite 5 years of services, she hadn't made any actual substantive change, including concerning domestic violence concerns that came out at the time of trial, and including her trial testimony that was deeply concerning about her lack of insight and her lack of accountability. So all of those findings were there, including about the reasonably foreseeable future. So the court can affirm this termination just on that path alone, that it was proven by clear and convincing evidence that she is palpably unfit.
I was curious about your wording in your analysis starting on page 21. You talk about substantial evidence. Why did you use substantial?
It's my understanding that that is the standard when we're operating under the clear error standard when examining just the prong about clear and convincing evidence that the parent is palpably unfit. The court just needs to find that there was substantial evidence in the record to support that finding. And so that was my argument there, that there was sufficient evidence. There was substantial evidence in the record for the court to weigh the evidence and make the appropriate findings that she is, in fact, palpably unfit and would be unable to care for the child for the reasonably foreseeable future. Let's see. And I believe, Your Honors, actually through our questions and answers this morning, I think we have addressed most of the issues I was hoping to cover in my presentation this morning. I do see I have a few minutes left, but I would be happy to cede the rest of my time unless there are other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Carlson, any rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor. For the record, Ann Morris Carlson for the appellant. I'm aware that throughout this morning's argument and throughout all the filings in this case, there are a number of facts that call mother's ability to parent into question. I also find it concerning that when we're looking at rebutting the presumption of palpable unfitness, we are able to look to a long history of working with Child Protective Services, rely on that history, and find that because of that history, she failed to rebut the presumption. Basically, the court made findings. She failed to alleviate all of the court's concerns. The court found, Judge Cochran, Ms. Carnita McGlory's testimony calls into question the efficacy of these groups for respondent mother, and I think that that sort of thing throughout this order just indicates the district court really skipped a step. The first step is, did mother meet the burden of production? that's a very low bar.
If I agree, and I think that your argument, you make some persuasive points about the district court going beyond, you know, I think JAK talked about, you know, did the parent create a fact issue as to whether they could meet this burden, you know, or whether they're palpably unfit. And, you know, to the extent that's a low burden, I think your argument has some merit. But my concern is that we do have the court going beyond this application of the presumption to say, even setting that whole question aside, let's assume she did rebut the presumption, I still find clear and convincing evidence here that mother is palpably unfit. Are you suggesting that the misapplication of the presumption somehow infects or implicates the court's analysis and the validity of the finding based on the overall evidence?
I think I would have a much different argument had the court given credit to the fact that mother rebutted the presumption of palpable unfitness and then made an analysis that mother is, in fact, palpably unfit to parent.
And why does that make a difference when you have findings that really go through all of the facts, the relevant facts, including all the steps mother has taken to try to address the issues and to become a parent and who could safely parent a child?
Because a parent has a constitutional right to parent their child, and the burden on the agency has to remain a heavy one, despite the fact that there is a presumption of palpable unfitness. The government can't skip steps when it's taking children away from their parents. And I think that it is of the utmost importance that the court make clear and specific findings that conform with the statutory criteria. And that in this case, yeah, we have a 42-page order, and I appreciate that there is a thoughtful analysis. But we need to acknowledge what the presumption does and what the presumption doesn't do. And the presumption does not negate what mother has done throughout the duration of this particular child protection case. The presumption, yeah, it's a mark against mother going into the case that we presume that you're palpably unfit. Can you present any evidence? Once you meet that low burden, the burden shifts back to the agency. Under the facts of a different case, I would argue that there also needs to be better findings regarding whether or not the agency made reasonable efforts to reunify the family. But in this case, Hennepin County gracefully actually offered mother some services. But if the presumption does not apply, the analysis needs to be a full TPR analysis of all three factors. In this case, the district court did make an analysis regarding reasonable efforts, which I think should be made in every case, and found that the agency made reasonable efforts. Respondent argues.
Oh. I agree that reasonable efforts needs to be, but if a parent has murdered a child, I don't think that the agency has to offer reasonable efforts to the parent.
Correct, Your Honor.
So not every case, but most cases.
To be clear, yeah, when there's a prima facie showing of egregious harm under subparent 6, you're absolutely right. And if I misstated what I was getting at, perhaps what I'm getting at is the many cases that I see that the issues stem from chemical dependency. And egregious harm is, of course, its own. The court is correct. I am asking that this court would find that this order is insufficient on the basis that mother clearly did meet the burden of production, and that it needs to be clear that the burden of production, once met, completely shifts the burden of persuasion back to the county. And this order reflects that the district court found mother didn't meet the burden of production by weighing evidence against what was presented on cross-examination. To respondent's point, it is that the court, the respondent said the district court did not cite other evidence, but the court found that what should be credible evidence, evidence presented by professional witnesses, by expert witnesses, was not credible based on the fact that it didn't completely alleviate every one of the court's concerns. Regardless of whether every concern of the court was alleviated, the burden of production was met, and that should have been acknowledged in this case. Are there any other questions I can answer for the court at this time?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Case was well argued, and we will have our decision out within 45 days.
Thank you.
And so, any questions from the students? The attorneys, you can go if you want. We can't talk about the cases, but we can talk about other things.